Well, hello. This is John Moore, a contributor to TechTarget's Search CIO site, and I have on the phone with me today Ted Ross, General Manager and CIO of the City of Los Angeles. Just by way of some quick background, the city's information technology agency provides services for radio and voice networks and runs a data center that provides application services to numerous city departments, financial, payroll, and procurement, among others. Thanks very much for taking some time out to talk today.
My pleasure.
So we're interested in hearing from you on Windows Server 16, and especially in the broader context of enterprise technology adoption. So with that in mind, what do you see as the key adoption issues an organization like yours faces when working through a transition where you're bringing in newer versions of products like Windows Server?
It's actually a very fascinating question, and it really comes down to our strategic approach. As a large government organization, we want to gain the benefits of new releases. We certainly want to stay on top of on the security perspective, but we also have to juggle all these different legacy applications, and we have to move along a lot of baggage, so to speak. So we watch for new versions, we watch release blogs, we watch for issues and fixes. We start by checking with our vendors. We have a lot of off-the-shelf tools, development tools, monitoring tools, etc. We look for compatibility. We look for certification examples. And when we feel that the new release is solid enough, stable enough, and addresses any major like security risk factors, then we start to make the migration and move on to it.
Right. So you have a standard approach for conducting enterprise software upgrades, and how does that work?
Yeah, you know, we would not think of ourselves as leading edge, but we never want to be behind the curve. So we try to kind of balance it out. And in a lot of ways, it's what you'd expect from a government IT team. So when a version is solid enough, then we'll go ahead and stop implementing the previous version. We'll only implement new version. We'll put off new installs. We'll avoid changes in development environments and any disruption to existing projects or users. We'll go ahead and put together a project plan because we need to make a mass migration, and we want to minimize disruption from our stakeholders. We'll do full regression testing of our applications. We'll make sure that we're compatible. We'll mitigate any compatibility issues. And then we'll go ahead and prioritize environments and start migrating them on over. And we know it's a balance. It's a balance of waiting long enough to ensure that it's solid and stable enough for us to make the move, but not waiting too long so that we're implementing old versions and we're just getting stuck in a cycle of getting off of burning platforms.
So how long does a process like that generally take?
Great question. You know, anywhere between 6 months and a year, depending on the version we're jumping to and compatibility issues we'll run into. So some things can move quite quickly, sure. But some other aspects can move slower. And so we're really trying to, as an organization, you know, we saw this with XP. We saw this with Windows Server 2003. We don't want to be that organization that builds something out and then it's very difficult to maintain and we find ourselves in a crisis. So we've been much more aggressive of front-loading the effort to ensure that we can do a much faster turnaround. Because sometimes enterprise IT shops are really good at building something, but really bad in keeping it current. We don't want to be there.
Right. So in the case of Windows Server 16, there's some interesting wrinkles, one of which is the transition from per-processor to per-core licensing. How do you see that impacting adoption?
It's funny, you know, I would say in some ways one of the only potential benefits of having a legacy environment is that we're not appropriately structured or set up with maintenance. It causes us to have to do mandatory upgrade projects that could help discount licensing changes. So we're in the course of moving a lot up into the cloud right now. It gives us the ability to negotiate enterprise agreements for software assurance and other aspects that could help us kind of mitigate future licensing cost issues, et cetera, and allow for us to ensure that we have periodic platform pricing resets. Government has budgets that are set 12 to 18 months in advance, so spikes in licensing or platforming costs cannot be easily addressed, and that's highly problematic. So everything we can do to try to set agreements to address future upgrade needs and prioritize it in contract negotiations allow us to kind of move these things in mass.
Right. And Microsoft, making moves in the developer space, support for Docker containers and Windows Server 16 being one example. Is that of any interest to you?
Certainly Docker and containerization is interesting to us, and we're keeping an eye on it. you know, believe it or not, government budgets really haven't fully come out of the 2008 Great Recession. So we still feel a lot of that impact. So we're not exactly where we want to be when it comes to investment. However, the ability for us to be able to simplify the creation management of a large number of systems in a limited number of physical machines, or to provide like a better, more reliable performance or redundancy without worrying about uniformity of environment, is game changing. So we watch it very closely, but I can't say at this point that, you know, we expect to have rapid adoption at this point.
So as containers make their way into the organization at some point, what would be the main benefit? Just taking virtualization to the next level, getting more density?
I think there's certainly an element of that. I think it also helps us to uniformity of environment is a very big issue. We've got Linux, we've got Windows, we've got old AIX. We're even moving applications off of a mainframe. So we're very aggressively working in towards those goals. So for us, containerization and portability start to become a very important conversation. It allows us to really take a hybrid cloud approach so that we can maximize on-prem versus cloud infrastructure and know when to work, when to put a workload in one versus the other.
Right. And speaking of cloud infrastructure, you mentioned on a previous call we did was a couple months ago, you mentioned Azure as being something that you're working with now. Is that the future? Do you see more workloads heading to Azure?
We absolutely see more workloads working to Azure and AWS. You know, cloud infrastructure is a game changer for us in many ways. It provides consistent budgeting. It helps mitigate impact on staff resources. So as city budgets, as government budgets come back, they often come back in specific areas. So it's much more difficult to hire new employees, but one may be able to get subscription budget. So, you know, having that balance assists us quite a bit. Allowing us to stay current with patching, security, et cetera, is important. It minimizes physical space and the requirements of our data center, which we have and we're modernizing. And it certainly goes far in the direction of disaster recovery. You know, government is there is at no time that government is more relied upon than during an emergency. And so we find cloud infrastructure to be a key component when it comes to disaster recovery. So not having to deal with hardware, not having to better, more efficient ways to utilize limited staff and knowledge base, having agility and flexibility on projects to be able to spin up workloads and pull them back down again, they really all play into our space. And we think that those are certainly game changers when it comes to changing the way we provision.
Right. What kind of resources do you run in the cloud right now?
So, you know, we started off with the quote-unquote gateway choices, right? And it's kind of a silly joke relating to gateway drugs. And we start off with web services, websites, et cetera. So our LACity.org, our banner, Vanguard website's up, our Babin system, which is the system where the city publishes their opportunities. We have 50,000 registered vendors in that. So it has all of our contracting and procurement information on there. So we've got quite a bit of web that's up in the cloud. We've also been moving into other key areas of migrating some core applications up there, including even some innovative ones. We have an emergency operations center. In a disaster, people are looking to that EOC, as we call it, to be able to help manage police, fire, other emergency processes. Instead of having a physical alternate emergency operations center that requires provisioning of equipment, addressing cooling issues, keeping the equipment tested and ready, we went ahead and spun up a small version in the cloud so that core EOC tools, emergency management tools, are available anytime, anywhere. So if something happens to a beautiful primary EOC facility, we can spin up an EOC anytime, anywhere with simply an internet connection through the cloud. So it's a mixture of those very clear cloud use cases, as well as moving more and more of those enterprise items on there, and even some innovative items like this virtual EOC is what we call it.
That's more cost effective?
Much more cost effective. We're at the point of spending around $70 a month to have a virtual EOC. Certainly, when we need to activate, we'll be spending a lot more. But think of it this way. Instead of me having to pay $50,000 to $75,000 in hardware and have to go through the refresh and have to send people to a remote location to be able to get their hands on it and keep it running, I can, for the course of under $100 a month, maintain a virtual EOC that's very easy to access for staff. And then when it comes time to be able to break it open in an emergency, we're still not going to be spending huge amounts of money. But even if we did, it's during an emergency, the city is more than willing to spend essential money. But from an ongoing operational perspective, we have very low cost insurance, so to speak.
So that's a huge plus for any budget-minded organization.
Yes, it is. And so we think of cloud as useful in so many key areas. We love it for the disaster recovery side. We love it for its ability to burst. We love it for the agility around it. And we love the idea that it's pay per use. So using this emergency operations center example, we're not heavily using it today because we're not in a disaster situation. So we pay at a very low cost. And when we do need to use it, we'll pay a whole lot more money. But that, of course, makes sense because we'll be in the middle of a disaster. And that is exactly the time when we're more than willing to pay what it takes to protect Los Angeles businesses and residents. And that's, to be honest, even a time in which grants and other items would probably even reimburse those costs.
Yeah. No, I've been reading over the past 18 months, the different market research reports that indicate that, you know, for quite a few customers, the security concerns that were issues with when the cloud first emerged a decade ago are starting to subside. Not that people aren't concerned with cloud security, but it doesn't seem to be quite the same impediment it was a decade ago. So what's your thinking on cloud security? Sounds like you're pretty at ease with the amount of security available in cloud-based operations.
You know, early when cloud infrastructure was taking adoption, there was the expression, and it's a very apt one, and I love to quote it over and over again. It's that cloud is not a technology, but it's a business model. And that is a very apt statement. It's really virtualization that is driving the technology of the cloud, but it's a different business model. And what I think it gets to the heart of is it changes the way you need to operate. And you can't see that any more clearly than in, let's say, cybersecurity. We were used to building on-prem hardware within our firewall. That was the model we were accustomed to using. Once we started to discuss the idea of moving applications out into the cloud, it caused indigestion because it was not a model we were used to. And so our cyber folks and our data center folks had to operate differently to leverage cloud in a secure way. And I think some large organizations, you know, they're not willing to necessarily make that investment, or they're slow to make that investment, and maybe they're concerned on how to make that pivot. But for organizations that do understand what the cloud has to offer and can make the pivot to leverage it in a secure manner, they're reaping the benefits that everyone's discussing around cloud infrastructure. And so in light of that, here we have companies that literally would go out of business if they weren't able to deliver strong security. And we have companies who are running entire operations, huge operations, out of cloud infrastructure. So I think it starts to become the challenge and the opportunity is for enterprise organizations who already have large on-prem footprints to be able to make that migration to the cloud, to be able to set the right model so they're doing so in a secure way. It's an extension of their network in many ways. And then they'll be able to see the benefits. And I think the beauty of it is there are still certain benefits around on-prem. So the hybrid model, I think, makes perfect sense. It allows you to gain the benefits of cloud infrastructure. It allows you to, at time, gain the benefits of on-prem infrastructure. And with portability, you can move between the two based on cost, based on use case, et cetera. And I think ultimately having those capabilities and having those options is what makes the modern IT data center very effective.
Well, that's a really good summation. That's all the questions I had. Anything else you'd like to bring up about Windows Server, migrations, Azure, the cloud?
You know, it's interesting. We're more and more moving to the point where, you know, as an enterprise organization, we build bigger and bigger footprints. And it raises more and more of a challenge, especially if you're in an organization that isn't as strong as it should be in budgeting the refresh of previous technology. And I think it just requires CIOs and IT leaders to be very mindful that, you know, everything, there's no such thing as a free puppy, right? if someone handed you a free puppy, you're going to have to raise the puppy, feed the puppy, care for the puppy. And we have all these applications out there, legacy and new ones, that could be those free puppy incidents. So it's very important for us to think through and in a very successful way kind of crack the nut on how to manage and maintain what we already have. And that involves, of course, migration policies. And that's above and beyond the fact that there's new functionality and new capabilities that we should be taking advantage of. So it's the juggling match, I think. It's the juggling, the tightrope. That's a better analogy. It's the tightrope walk that I think the modern CIO needs to do.
Okay. Well, thanks once again for taking the time out to talk today.
Thank you.